Welcome to the Archive Project. I'm Andrew Proctor, Executive Director of Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers for more than 30 years of literary arts in Portland. Support for the Archive Project comes from Cole Haan, the fashion brand that's acknowledging extraordinary people who write, read, and shape the world through their extraordinary stories. Find these and more at colehaan.com. In this episode, we feature some of the incredible slam poets who performed as part of Verslandia, the citywide youth poetry slam presented by Literary Arts. High school students across Portland spend the year writing and competing with their peers. And each April, two slam poets from each school come to the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall to claim the title as slam champ. These young poets are thrilling to hear. They will give you the chills and perhaps bring tears to your eyes. At this moment, when it feels our society is cleaved with deep divisions, race, geography, economics, and age, it is so important to take the time to really listen to young voices who are, after all, our future. These young writers come from all walks of life in Portland and have incredible stories to tell. A quick note to listeners, portions of this episode contain mature themes that may not be suitable for all audiences. In addition to hearing some of these stunning performances, we will also hear from Anis Majgani, who is a two-time national slam champ and winner of the International World Cup Poetry Slam. Majgani is the MC of Verslandia and also a board member of Literary Arts. Here's Majgani.
Hey! Thanks for having me. How is everyone? Yes! Y'all, this is so awesome to have this in the Schnitz. It doesn't feel like very long ago where Verslandia was working and operating out of the Wonder Ballroom and the Mission Theater. So to hit it big like this is awesome. And I'm so happy that all you people that I know and can see in this darkness are here to join us. So give yourselves a round of applause for that. So, who here has been to a poetry slam before? 10-4. Who here has never been to a poetry slam before? You guys cheered as if you were ashamed of yourselves. And while there is something beautiful about living in an era where someone might be ashamed that they had not participated in a poetry event, this is an inclusive night. So whoever has not been to a poetry slam before, scream it loud and proud. Who has not been here before? Yes! Fantastic. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So what is going to happen here shortly is over the course of this year, around high schools around Portland, wonderful young poets have been throwing themselves at the mercy of their peers by opening up their hearts and baring their funny bones in front of other folks in order to be judged, literally. And out of the course of that year, and that sometimes very vulnerable and sometimes very scared and sometimes very brave situation, we have gathered 20 finalists that are going to share work on this stage. We're going to hear from all 20 in the first round. Our wonderful math folks, who I'll introduce later, will be tabulating things off stage, and we'll take a 15-minute intermission. At the start of round two, I'll announce the 10 finalists for the second round, and then we'll proceed with that. And at the end of all this, there will be five young people determined as winners of 2017 Verslandia. Before we get to all that, I wanted to introduce these five beautiful people over here to my left and your right. There are judges. Please, a round of applause for them. Just as there would be no poetry slam without the poets, without the judges, this would just be a beautiful night of reading and sharing and listening to poetry, which is fine and dandy for the chumps. But for us, you know, 1,400 cool kids, we like to have a little bit of blood in our narrative. And so these fine humans are going to assist us with that. So as I failed to mention earlier, what's going to happen on stage is I'm going to call these poets one by one. They're going to come up, they're going to do a poem, and the judges are going to each hold up a score between 0.0 and 10. We will then drop the lowest, drop the highest, and our scorekeepers will mush those scores together, and as I mentioned, we'll announce those later on, and the top 10 will advance to the second round. So in the slam, there's a 3-minute time period with a 10-second grace period. I'm going to do something real quick. These are crazy times we are living inside of right now. Like, crazy times. So crazy, I can only laugh about them at times. And so, in honor of that, and in honor of where all of us on some days find ourselves, I just want to, like, have a little call and response with everybody. All right? So I'm gonna yell something out to you, and you call it back to me. All right? Y'all ready? And this will also get us into the spirit for the night. Because a slam is what you make of it. If you hear a poem that you love, you cheer for it as hard as you can. All right? So follow with me. I am here. I have a voice. My voice is not yours. My voice is mine. And I will use it. So, with that being said, let's step into the evening. Are y'all ready to start this off? Yes! Yes!
Tell me about, like, the origins of the slam competition.
Slam originated in Chicago sometime in the mid-80s, like I want to say around like 85 or something like that. And it was this construction worker named Mark Smith, who was also a poet. And to my understanding, Mark just sort of felt a bit of a disconnect with regards to what poetry was and what he felt its purpose is. And the community at large, you know, that the majority of us don't care about poetry, or believe we don't care about poetry, and don't believe that it's like something for us, you know, that it's something that we're not smart enough to understand, that it's for a very small percentage of people, as opposed to the idea that, like, well, poetry is simply a tool for explaining what it means to be human, for processing that, for communicating that, for sharing that, and being shared that with by others. So he created this, essentially a bar game, to trick people into wanting to listen to poetry and trick people into wanting to, like, read and write and share poetry. And so he formed this competition. I can't remember where. I think it started at some bar other than the Green Mill first, but I can't remember. But the Green Mill in Chicago is a pretty famed bar, really old school, and that's where the slam has been happening for a really, really long time, and that's where it had first started. And essentially, it gave anybody 3 minutes to share a poem that they wrote, no costumes, no props, no music, and out of the audience that was there that night, they would get scores between 0 and 10. So it was this... you know, very arbitrary numbering system. Like, it basically was just whoever a judge was, it was just kind of like, do you like this poem or do you not like this poem? And essentially, like, the bigger picture was in order to just kind of, like, give it a competitive narrative, to give it a sports narrative, to get people pumped and jazzed. You know, it's like, you know, you see a poet on stage and you're like, I don't know what this guy's saying, but I really like his socks. So, like, you know, that's the guy that I'm rooting for. Or somebody else is like, I really like his poem, so he's the person I'm rooting for.
Well, it gives the audience a way in to participate.
Exactly.
I mean, that is kind of, that seems to me also, sounds nuanced, but actually is sort of fundamental to getting people engaged.
Definitely.
Right?
Because it's like, it becomes something different. It delivers stakes to people, you know, like, and that not only does it deliver stakes, but it delivers stakes that they are inherent to, that their participation is inherent to it.
Yeah, they decide the outcome.
Exactly. Right. And so you know, that was how it started off. And so that's still what a poetry slam is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's it is something that allows itself to be molded for the different communities that it's in, you know, as to what best serves that purpose. It's not to see who's the number one basketball team in the country. And so, like, this is how it is always done, and this is how it is set up. The purpose is to get people to be inspired in themselves enough to feasibly write poems and share poems. And its purpose is to get people who don't write interested in listening to poems and to care about poetry and to realize, like, oh, poetry is this giant wide spectrum, that there are plenty of things in there that don't speak to me, but there are probably some things that do speak to me. And so if that's its purpose, then whatever, you know, is best for a community to explore that purpose, it allows for that to happen.
Please welcome to the stage, Dylan!
I always knew about Grant High School's Poetry Slam, and that it was a Portland-wide event. And I said, that would be really cool to do that, but I can't do that. The day before, somebody literally forced me to do it. Like, Dylan, you're doing this. Just do this with me. It was with a friend. And so that just goes to show anybody can do it. A huge aspect of slam poetry is just pure emotion and keeping it real and authentic. And when you do that and you're passionate and you put yourself out there, then nothing can really go wrong. Even if you don't have the experience or you're lacking in some other areas, if you have the passion for it, then I think it'll be good.
All right, listen, shit has been going down, 'cause the cops have been willy-nilly going around and gunning down black people there and there. You hear the same damn story everywhere. It all starts with the popo doing a routine stop. They're always stopping blacks because they rob and shoot a lot. The next thing you hear is, put your hands up, pop, 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 and another innocent black man is shot. Michael Brown, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile. How many of the slain that have names that we'll never hear? The police keep killing, got black people living in fear. Blue lives matter, all lives matter, goes in and out the other ear. It's the same shit happening town to town. And when the community reacts, the government and police order us to calm down? No, we think you need to calm down. We think you need to put your guns down. We think you need to realize we ain't playing around. We think you need to stop expecting us to kneel and bow when you're murdering our people like we're no more than hounds. The local police bureaus have turned into the military with the tanks they drive and assault rifles they carry. People peacefully protest. They shoot rubber bullets and throw gas. More people put their hands up. Police continue to attack. Young black teens are scared for their lives every damn day from the police we hide. What are we supposed to do when the laws that we abide by are being broken by the system from which they derived? Part of me wants to be like Martin, but part of me Malcolm. Which route possesses the best possible outcome? Because on one hand, violence is something I want to abstain from. But we've been victims for years. Taking power back don't seem that dumb. Man, it's 2017, and the shit black people get killed for is completely obscene. Getting in a car, going to work, grinding hard, buying Skittles, walking down the street, selling CDs or cigarettes to the people you meet. Sometimes I wonder if I should even get my driver's license, because I'm scared of being pulled over for a traffic violation, because I don't want to become another hashtag name if a racist cop decides to send a bullet my way. Nobody gonna silence my voice. You gotta kill me to do that. Nobody gonna silence my voice. You gotta kill me to do that. Nobody gonna silence me. I'm gonna keep on tearing down bigotry, white supremacy, and white privilege. And listen, I know y'all love it, but don't realize it. Y'all a little scared of blacks, but y'all just disguise it. 'Cause Becky may be dating a black dude, but she still gets uncomfortable around his whole crew. Things need to change, and they need to change real soon. I mean a difference, not a sorry. We don't want your silver spoons. But it can't just be me. It's gonna take everybody in this room. Weeks ago, the Portland police gunned down a 17-year-old black boy. They say it was because he had a gun. But he was on his knees, and the gun turned out to just be a toy. His name was Quanis Hayes. Say his name.
Dylan! Judges, what do we have for Dylan? Make your decisions and hold them up in 3, 2, 1. What do we have? We have a 7.9, an 8.6, an 8.9, an 8.9, and a 9.8 for Dylan. Applaud the poet.
I was that angsty 14-year-old just kind of writing poetry in a little coffee-stained journal. But then my first experience with slam poetry, where I actually performed, was actually through speech and debate, where one of the events that you can do is called poetry. I've continued doing slam. I perform locally a lot. I've spoken at churches and at different education events, and I actually had the privilege of being on Oregon's first slam team to go to the Brave New Voices International Poetry Festival. Like, I don't want to like come in with it with too big of an ego, because everybody here is super talented and everybody has something really good to say, and I'm just gonna have a good time. Like, you don't come in with any expectations, and you can't have any expectations violated, and so you have a fun time no matter what.
And keep that energy going, and please welcome the next poet to the stage, Maya.
The therapist holds up ink blots. The first one looks like hands, looks like my hands, looks like my hands covered in blood. I tell her it's not possible. There has to be some mistake. I didn't do this. I'm not even related to them. So why can't I find bleach strong enough to get this off my hands? My therapist gives me a number to call. She says I can resolve the weight from my conscience. You have reached the White Privilege Incorporated headquarters in our locations everywhere in America. Have you heard about our products? Now, for only the price of being born white, you can gain an access pass to anywhere in America and not be considered a criminal, even though nearly every school shooter shares your skin color. Here at White Privilege Incorporated, you don't have to worry about changing the way you dress so police don't mistake your body for a bullseye. We can teach you skills from how to conceal drugs to firearms. Not that you'll need it, because statistically speaking, it is unlikely your Fourth Amendment rights will be violated. Here at White Privilege Incorporated, we can help you cope with the immense weight on your shoulders caused by the gold bricks strapped to your back since your birth by transferring them into Bitcoin. That way, you don't ever have to acknowledge their existence. And if you put all of your earnings into this product, we'll even throw in a complimentary blindfold that you can put on whenever you see a man of color being harassed in a grocery store. Or when a video of police brutality pops up onto your Facebook feed and reality makes you feel just a wee bit uncomfortable. Don't worry, you could wear this product forever and never notice the difference. Here at White Privilege Incorporated, we can help you make the most out of that 400-year head start you've been given. Don't worry if you're not directly related to any colonizers. As long as you look enough like them, you can access the fruits of their labor. Here at White Privilege Incorporated, we give you the choice of the world's strongest bleach to wash the blood from the tools they've given you. It will be easier to use them when your work gloves aren't stained all the time. With our help, you too can learn to pull yourself up by the bootstraps that your ancestors stole from everyone else. Here at White Privilege Incorporated, you never have to worry about your membership expiring. It's a lifetime guarantee for a product you can use anywhere in America. Don't waste it. Now, would you like to place your order? My therapist looks at me. How did the call go? She asks. I told her my ancestors placed this order for me without my consent. My therapist holds up the second ink blot. I see hands. White hands digging into a black man's neck. He's screaming, I can't breathe, 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 I can't breathe. 11 times before he does not have another breath left in his lungs to tell his babies how much he loves them. I look at my hands and feel the presence of my breath, and then I realize that even though they ought to, these feelings do not come with my order from White Privilege Incorporated.
Give it up for Maya. Judges, hold your scores up in 3, 2, 1. We have an 8.3, an 8.7, an 8.9, a 9.0, and a 9.2 for Maya. Applaud the poet.
The world of poetry as it's taught pedagogically and has this canon and a history and a professional sort of track, right? That goes up through MFA programs and on into the world, and it's printed by Knopf if you're the most lucky person in the world, right? You know, if that's what you care about.
Yeah.
And then then you have this other form, which born in the 80s, which is by poetry standards is shockingly late, right? That by definition wanted and aspired to be democratic, right? It had very different aspirations, or has, and that may not be fair to the traditional poets of the world, but what's that tension look like?
I think, like, you know, I think that it is a tension that is there, or at least has existed, and in some ways it has been overblown, and in other ways it unfortunately has not.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there are definitely people, and, you know, maybe not as much now because the landscape is very, very different, but, like, there are definitely people that are not only resistant to what poetry outside of the ivory tower looks and feels like, but spiteful and hateful of it, you know?
Right. And right, which seems like an enormous waste of time.
You know, it's like I remember a friend had gone to AWP some years ago, which is this giant conference, and she was having like a really great conversation with this woman, and the woman vice versa was having a really good conversation with her, and they were chatting up, and she asked this woman that she had just met, like, where she was with, and I can't remember what press or journal it was, and my friend was like, oh, I love them, I love the work that you guys do, and she was like, oh, thanks so much, you know, and who are you with, and she's like, I'm here with the Austin Poetry Slam, and the woman apparently just turned and walked away, you know, and that's not to say that, like, that's what always happens, you know, but it is definitely, like, that is a thing that happens, you know, like, that is a reality, and, you know, that was 2002, 2003, and I think that the internet has definitely, like, changed stuff.
And on that point, I mean, this is sort of like where I get a little confessional. It's like, okay, so when we began to get interested here in it, which was late, you know, admittedly, and someone told me about you, right? So now that the internet, to your point, it's all there for you to look. I was like, all right, I got to learn about this. And I remember sitting at my desk and I Googled your name. And then I was like, the first video I saw, I got chills. I mean, I am such a fan of your work. I got chills. The hair on my arms, like, stood up. Like, I was like, and I had no idea that that's what spoken word and slam was. Right. And I have 2 degrees in English, right? And I studied in 2 different countries to do it. And so that amount of ignorance to me is, you know, my own. Well,
you know, I mean, like, there's definitely an ignorance with regards to, like, what the performative aspects of poetry have to offer. But some of that is just, like, ignorance because of, like, one's path, you know?
Right.
And one doesn't always have a huge amount of control over that. And then there's also, like, the willful ignorance, you know?
Right.
But, like, I don't know when I would have learned about slam if not for this random magazine in my parents' house that flipping through and seeing an article. You know,
you're right.
I feel at some point I would have stumbled across it, but, like, that just opened up a very different door to me. And, you know, but it is strange and fascinating and frustrating and saddening and irrelevant to me at times how many people do not allow themselves into this, like, world, and that they are then not privy to some really amazing stuff. Like, over the years, I've invited many friends to different poetry events. And, you know, a number of them come to stuff, a number of them come to hear me read, and which I'm very, very thankful for. But it's funny to think how you feel sort of like some sort of, like, weird jerk of some sort to say to someone, come to this thing, it may change your life. You know, like it's the stupidest sentence.
Right.
You know, it really, really is. Some of the poems that I have seen over the last 20 years have changed my life, have saved my life, you know, like, have impacted me in so many ways that, like, I'm aware of, and so many ways that I'm not aware of.
And please welcome up to the stage, Havana.
Here He'll tell you age is just a number. Between mouthfuls of your flesh and bones, he'll tell you, hands squeezing your thigh hard. When you try to pull away, he'll tell you that it's okay. His little secret. He will tuck you away and hide you under his tongue. You used to think honey poured from his lips when he spoke, but it is thicker like cement, and he is pouring it down your throat, and you are choking. He'll tell you you're different than most girls your age, and you'll realize he sees girls like you as a brand, a doll, a rare collector's item to throw around. Laying in his bed feels like dying, and your skin crawls, but he never lets it get far. His hands burn, his sheets feel like needles. Your mouth tastes like all of the things that should never have happened. He smiles, you do not. You tell yourself you wanted this, he tells you you wanted this, and even when he is swallowing you whole, you tell yourself that this is what you asked for. But the cable access law shows tell you that this is not what you wanted, and the websites say that he is a predator, but he doesn't look like a lion, and you do not look like a lamb. The websites say he's grooming you, but he says he loves you. Your mother always told you not to play with knives, but she didn't say anything about men who looked like knives. You'll feel his hand circling your wrist even when he isn't there. Looking over your shoulder will become a habit because he is everywhere and nowhere. God and monster all in one and yours to worship. He will speak as if he holds your mortality on a string and you've never played this version of Cat's Cradle before. Now you know it is not honey that pours from his lips. And now you're starting to think that maybe he does kind of look like a lion, and you might just look like a lamb.
A 7.5, a 7.9, an 8.9, a 9.1, and a 9.5. Applaud the poet. And please welcome up to the stage, round of applause for Pocket.
Atlantis. I am searching for Atlantis, searching for this lost city laden in these sunken waters to which many lucky sons and daughters have gone before. With the most that we can hope for is that we might be able to reminisce about the city made of unending bliss known as Atlantis. That somehow we overcame. Somehow we were able to find this beautiful continent because we didn't care what it meant when others told us it wasn't real. It didn't matter. Atlantis is Atlantis. The only reason we were looking for this was simply because it was Atlantis. Simply because it was there. Simply because we could stare into the distance and hope something could stare us back. So we began to backtrack over everything we ever knew. Atlantis. I am fixated on Atlantis, this emotion, this feeling, this moment, this Atlantis. I am utterly addicted to the amazingness of what could be. I want to lay vision upon this lost continent, declare what it meant to look at such beauty. And yet too many people ask why I passed them by. They didn't even try to find Atlantis, just we use notes of those who got it and thought it would happen to them. So we end up not understanding the effort needed to find this lost continent. Hell, we didn't leave a single dent in what it meant to find where the wild things went. But we are hell-bent on this Atlantis. If we don't have talent, we use hope. If we don't have hope, we use effort. If we don't have effort, we use persistence. Whatever it takes to reach the distance, whoever it is waiting for us in Atlantis. This sunken city, inhabited by few and known by fewer, Atlantis, I can feel Atlantis in my skin. And it is for Atlantis I must win, even if I'm dumb, even if I'm stupid, if I can't do anything right, if I miss Atlantis, I'll try again, again and again and again and again, whatever it takes to push myself at the bend, because I admit it, I'm committed, everything I did it for Atlantis. Because I am the greatest. I have to be. I've spent so much time looking for Atlantis. The because eventually people start looking at you. I think there's something wrong with his head. And it's funny because I've been thinking the exact same thing. But we don't speak about it. We get some pills to make you feel better, moving you from counselor to counselor. Now, why don't you try writing? Don't worry. Poetry is just self-reflection. But after a while, I think you'll find it becomes like self-dissection. It is ripping yourself apart, squeezing the only part that lets you feel. Ecstasy. Dipping your pen, whatever ooze comes out. Writing, however, to reach this fabled acceptance.
Give it up for Pocket! And judges, let's see what scores you have. Hold them high in 3, 2, 1. We have a 7.3, an 8.0, an 8.5, an 8.9, and a 9.2 for Pocket. Applaud the poet. We are halfway through the first round of the night. Please put your hands together and welcome to the stage, Zawadi.
Immigration, the international movement of people into a country of which they are not natives or where they do not possess citizenship in order to start or reside there. The academic literature provides mixed findings for the relationship between immigration and crime worldwide. But findings for the United States states that immigration has no impact on crime rate or that it reduces it. Immigration. You see, I am in love with dot. Nothing when it comes to hatred. Nothing when it comes to stereotypes. Nothing when it comes to white supremacy. Nothing when it comes to racial microaggressions. Nothing when it comes to multi-generational anger. Nothing when it comes to racial segregation. Nothing when it comes to mistreatment based on the color of my damn skin. 5 reasons I am proud to be African. Correction, as you Americans call it, black. 1, my blood is pure African. My veins shout the word black to the ears of those willing to listen. My bones whisper the word strong in my yells, education and independence. My lips murmur the words pride and honest. 2, you see, from the time that God thought to create me, bending me to perfection and creation, with a black raven of sunlight, he planted an African seed which rooted deep into my brain and overwhelmed with curves. 3, the roots went deeper and spread to my skin, creating a shadow brown that covered my whole body. 4, my accent was deeply rooted, unwilling to let go of my mother tongue. You see, I love my accent because it was given to me as a gift by my mother land, and I was taught not to throw away gifts, but to cherish them. 5, the way that my hair grows like a parabola and curls up like the innocent child that enters the world ready to fight for survival. Immigrant, a person who comes to live permanently in a foreign country. Zawadi Dose Doti. I am as strong as a lion, yet as weak as a fragile rose when it comes to seeing hatred flow naturally and easily from mouths that feel pain and hurt. I'm curious enough to bend into the cuts that deepen my scars. I'm kind enough to roam into my past and still have the will to forgive. I am important. I am creative. I am loving humans. I am hating humans. You see, it is time in this generation to lift our fist up in solidarity, to cease from repeating history, to roar like lions when our voices are being hushed by the winds of detestation, to start a movement like never before, to stand up for those who have no voices. It is time in this generation, it is time. Immigrants, Zawadi Dose Doti. Immigration, the international movement of people into a country of which they are not natives or where they do not possess citizenship in order to start or reside there. You see, we are all immigrants.
Put it together for Zawadi. Judges, make your decisions and hold them high in 3, 2, 1. Scores up. We have for Zawadi a 7.9, an 8.5, an 8.9, a 9, and a 9. Applaud the poet.
When I think of seeing a theater filled with kids and a more diverse collection of people than one will normally see in any large audience function in Portland, particularly since it also then has like their friends, their families. So you've got just like just a very diverse room. And that's something that's important for a multitude of reasons. You know, I think it's most importantly important for those kids to be able to sort of like see themselves in spaces where they may not always feel like they are allowed to go into.
Right.
Living in the whitest city in America and them feasibly possibly not being white.
Right.
You know, that's huge. You know, I mean, like, you know, I would argue that the best thing about Obama becoming president was simply the world that opened up in the brains and minds of young, you know, Americans of color. They're like, wait a second, I could be president.
Yeah, it's totally doable.
You know?
Right.
And so it's like it's like the same thing that they are then given this idea and this realization, not an idea, but this realization and this truth that like, oh, I'm allowed to be in this space.
Right.
You know, like I am of worth to be in this space. It is completely normal for me to be in this space. And so like that's super, super important. Being able to also say to all young folks of a certain age, particularly in a city like Portland, and I don't want this to sound like I hate Portland and I'm like ragging on it, because like I love Portland a lot, you know? And you know, when there's things that you love, you also, that means that you're like particular about the ways in which like you feel that it does not meet its greatest potential.
Right.
And you know, I find Portland to be a pretty ageist city. You know, like it seems to care most about people that are old enough to buy beer. And not simply like because they can buy beer, but it's like you will be hard pressed to find some place that is open after 7 o'clock on the weekend, that a 16-year-old can go to, you know? Like it does not happen in this city. And so I think just like for young folks everywhere, for young folks particularly in Portland, it's super rad that here's this thing that says to them like, your ideas about being a human are worthwhile, you know? Like people want to hear what you have to say, and you are allowed to share those things to those people. And it's also, I think, really important for just like folks who are not 15, who are not of color, to get exposed to those realities and those lives. You know, it's like the guy that you spoke to who said that, like, you know, why publish this black author? You know, like black folks don't read books. It's like, well, A, that's not true, but B, that's implying that like everybody only wants to read the experiences of the people that are just like them.
Right.
And for some of us, that is true. For some of us, that's not true. And for those of us for which it is true, you know, like this allows an opportunity to hopefully combat that. For those of us who don't believe that's true, who do want to open ourselves up to experiences that are not just, that don't just mirror our own,
right,
it does then provide that opportunity. Like, oh, this is what it means to like get to participate and be part of a community that is larger than simply the person that I am and
that's
the
color
of my skin and the shape of my background and the shape of my culture. And so something like Verslandia contributes to that realm of possibility as well.
And please welcome up to the stage, Engraver.
I honestly think that everyone can and should write poetry. For some people, it's slam poetry, which is very performance-oriented, and some people just aren't performers, and that's all right, too. But I find that through my poetry, I'm allowed to say a lot of things that I can't say in my daily life. You know, anything that I'm thinking about can become a poem, and then everybody has to listen to me say it, and sometimes it works out and it's magical.
So I'm having some trouble being honest in my Tinder profile. It's just that when I try to whittle myself into a mere 500 characters, my words come out truthless because the truth is ruthless, and I like a lot of things. The rain, Bjork, getting compliments, but not too many. I like finding the date on a penny or the numbers on a dollar bill that say where it was made. I like knowing all the places my parents have stayed. I might have been conceived in Idaho, but if you asked me for certain, I'd say, I don't know. My parents disagree on a lot of things. They have both lost their wedding rings. My sister lives in an arid town where you can see the horizon all the way around. Like me, my aunts have all changed their names. I was born on the couch before the midwife came. In a town, in a house with next to nothing in it, in the town I still live, in 20 minutes. I got a bruise on my forehead where I hit the floor, and I left behind stretch marks so everyone would know I had been there before. And the look I'm typically going for is forest dweller chic, and I don't really care about looks, but an open mind makes my knees weak. And I don't laugh at jokes that aren't funny. And I like the rain, but I get happier when it's sunny. And my favorite season is autumn, when the ground is covered in leaves. And you may think that's enough for my Tinder profile, but I haven't even gotten to my pet peeves. Like foot tapping, knuckle cracking, slow walking, coughing, complaining, sitting slightly in front of me. But don't worry, if I have a problem with you, I will tell you. And I know that's blunt of me. But I've always thought that honesty is more important than niceness. And if I call you out, it doesn't have to be a crisis. And I sleep talk. And sleep yell. And sleep sing. It's actually quite melodic. And I'm not crazy, I'm just neurotic. And I'm not loud, I'm just resonant. And I'm not bossy, I'm just right and assertive. And I'm not dumb, I'm actually really smart. I just don't have a lot of time to do homework when I'm exploding with art, and most of the time I'd rather stand than sit. And I'm sorry, but when I talk really fast, I have a tendency to spit. And I hope you're starting to see why 500 characters is bullshit. Because me, I am infinite. I am a galaxy of shooting stars worth 1,000 billion pictures, which is why my Tinder profile says, I'm a poet. That's me. So swipe right for a whole lot of poetry.
Engraver! Judges! Let's see those scores in 3, 2, 1. Hold them high. We have a 7.6, a 7.9, an 8.3, an 8.5, and a 9.8 for Engraver.
When I performed last year, I'd only been writing for 3 months. Since I've been very active in the slam community, I volunteered for Portland Poetry Slam for a while. I go to Slamlandia every month and volunteer there. And I've really grown as an artist, being surrounded by some of the best artists in Portland and having access to them. So I feel a lot more developed, but that also means that like my expectations of myself have grown a lot. And I heard someone make a great analogy today that jumping out of an airplane the first time, big deal. Jumping out of the airplane the second time, way scarier. And I think that that really applies to my life in the next 2 hours.
And please welcome up to the stage, put your hands together for Lily.
It's not just the fire in your belly. You have to have the bile in your throat. Kellyanne Conway. Dear Miss Conway, I want to be you when I grow up. Dear Miss Conway, the other girls on the playground say things like you're an affront to feminism everywhere, or you work with a self-interested evil that demeans the rights of millions. And while I might agree, my admiration remains unmitigated. See, Miss Conway, you are ambition personified, lawyer turned pollster turned media icon. Dear Miss Conway, I've watched you on TV and I'm awestruck the way you dance a ballet between the lines of reality and spin. They play NBA games after Meet the Press, but you're the one who truly pivots. Dear Miss Conway, alternative facts. How amazing a rhetorical invention to flip hundreds of years of epistemological structure on its head in a single sentence. It's unbelievable. Dear Miss Conway, I have an overproduction of bile on account of my psychiatric medications. Dear Miss Conway, sometimes I am really good at speaking, can argue my way from Pride and Prejudice to Prison Industrial Complex in 5 seconds flat. My mouth turned transcontinental high-speed rhyme machine. I waltz vowels off my tongue and slide music through my teeth. Only 17 days in, breathing starts to seem like a waste of time because my body feels more wings than bones, air bent to lift, not saturate, this bile-ridden ambition that makes my hands shake and the whole world turn into a mess of blinding opportunity where everything is hilarious and the rain is really just alternative sunshine. I hate the things you say. You, me. I hate watching myself speak sometimes, feeling a huddled mass in the back of my throat, yearning to breathe free, but only ever coming out in staccato eruptions that rake across my teeth. I watch my world burn, happy for the heat. You, me, this boiling decline, this sounding torrent directed toward a holy grail, white-knuckled fists will never find. A child's ambition and a brilliant mind, a brittle mind, a broken mind, a belly full of fire, and a brain riddled with misplaced bile. Dear, do you ever regret that threat which keeps ambition from becoming monster? You monster, me, monster. Dear Miss Conway, the other girls on the playground tell ghost stories and I hear your name. Dear Miss Conway, I want to speak like you someday, to spin and pivot and watch my tongue dance. But I want to be able to believe it.
Lily! Judges! Let's get those scores together and hold them up in 3, 2, 1. Scores, we have an 8.7. An 8.9, an 8.9, a 9.0, and a 9.6 for Lily. Applaud the poet. Thank y'all so much for coming out tonight, by the way. I keep asking for rounds of applause for these poets, but please, another one. Y'all have really shared some really incredible work tonight, and I'm thankful that I get to be a part of this, so thank you. This is for the fat girls. This is for the little brothers. This is for the schoolyard wimps and the childhood bullies that tormented them. For the former prom queen and for the milk crate ball players. For the nighttime cereal eaters and for the retired elderly Walmart store front door greeters, shake the dust. This is for the benches and the people sitting upon them. For the bus drivers driving a million broken hymns. For the men who have to hold down 3 jobs simply to hold up their children. For the nighttime schoolers and for the midnight bike riders trying to fly. Shake the dust. This is for the 2-year-olds who cannot be understood because they speak half English and half God. Shake the dust. For the boys with the beautiful sisters, shake the dust. For the girls with the brothers who are going crazy. For the ones who are going out of their minds. For the gym class wallflowers and the 12-year-olds afraid of taking public showers. For the kid that's always late to class because he forgets the combination to his lockers. For the girl who loves somebody else, shake the dust. This is for the hard men who want love but know that it won't come. For the ones who are forgotten, the ones the amendments do not stand up for the ones who were told, speak only when you are spoken to, and that are never spoken to, speak every time you stand so you do not forget yourself. Do not forget yourself. Do not let one moment go by that doesn't remind you that your hearts beat thousands of times every single day, and that there are enough gallons of blood to make every one of you oceans. Do not settle for letting the waves settle. And for the dust to collect in your veins. This is for the celibate pedophile who keeps on struggling, for the poetry teachers, and for the people who go on vacations alone, for the sweat that drips off a Mick Jagger singing lips, and for the shaking skirt on Tina Turner's shaking hips, for the heavens and for the hells through which Tina has lived. This is for the tired and for the dreamers. For those families that will never be like the Cleavers with perfectly made dinners and sons like Wally and the Beaver. This is for the bigots, for the sexists, for the killers, for the big house jail sentence cats becoming redeemers, and for the springtime that always seems to know to show up after every one of our winters. This is for you. Make sure that by the time the fisherman returns, you are gone. Because just like the days, I burn at both ends. And every time I write, every time I open my eyes, I'm cutting out parts of myself just to give them to you. So shake the dust and take me with you when you do, for this has never been for me. All that pushes and pulls and pushes and pulls, it pushes for you. So grab this world by its clothespins and shake it out again and again and jump on top and take it for a spin. And when you hop off, shake it again. For this is yours. Make my words worth something. Make this more than just another poem that I write. More than just another poem, like just another night that sits heavy above every one of us. Walk into it, breathe it in, let it crash through the halls of your arms like the millions of years of millions of poets coursing like blood, pumping and pushing, making you live, shaking the dust. So when the world knocks at your front door, you clutch the knob tightly, but then you open on up and you run forward as far as you must, as fast as you can, with your arms spread before you, running into the greeting arms of the outside world, fingertips trembling, though they may be. Thank you very much.
This episode featured portions of Verslandia, the citywide youth poetry slam, which took place at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in April 2017. Verslandia 2018 is coming up on Thursday, April 26th at 7 p.m. Visit literary-arts.org for more information. This has been Literary Arts, the Archive Project. It's a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers for more than 30 years of literary arts in Portland. Join us next time for the Archive Project, a literary arts production in collaboration with Oregon Public Broadcasting. To hear more from the Archive Project, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Support for the Archive Project comes from Cole Haan, the fashion brand that's acknowledging extraordinary people who write, read, and shape the world through their extraordinary stories. Find these and more at colehaan.com. Our show is produced by Crystal Liguori for radio and podcast. Special thanks to the Literary Arts staff, board, and community. The show would not be possible without them. Thanks also to the band Emancipator for our theme music, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andrew Proctor, and this has been another edition of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. Join us next time and find your story here.